This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Craig Vandeweghe? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Craig Allen Vandeweghe was born on October 22, 1981, and lived in Denver, Colorado. In November 2012, he met a woman named Shanna Riddle, and they became romantically involved. She was just a little older than him, having been born on June 4, 1980. The couple married on May 18, 2014. In 2015, Shanna had a miscarriage. She had a second miscarriage a few months later. Shanna became pregnant for the third time in December of 2015. About 5 months later, on May 1, 2016, Craig and Shanna moved to Fort Worth, Texas. They did this so that Craig could accept a promotion in his job in the optical department at a Costco store. The couple lived on the 8500 block of Cactus Flower Drive in Fort Worth. Shanna was excited about living in the house and looking forward to starting a family. On September 5, 2016, the couple had a son named Diedrich, who they called DJ. Shanna quit her job as a nurse in order to care for DJ. This meant that Craig's income was all the family had. Their financial situation became difficult to manage. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On Thursday, December 15, 2016, at 9:29 p.m., Craig Vandeweghe called 911. He told the operator that he had arrived home about 5 minutes earlier and found that his wife and son were dead. They were both in an upstairs bedroom. His wife was in bed, and his son was in a bassinet next to the bed. When he first arrived home, he noticed the front door was unlocked. This was out of the ordinary. When he entered the house, it appeared to be torn up. The police arrived about 10 minutes later. Here's what they found during their investigation. Inside the house, investigators found the bodies of 36-year-old Shanna and her 3-month-old son, DJ. Their throats had been cut. It looked as though the victims had been dead for several hours. Kitchen cabinets were open and drawers had been pulled out, but all the items appeared to be in place, like nothing was taken. Jewelry, firearms, televisions, cell phones, Shanna's purse, and other items of value were in the house. Some items were in plain view, including the firearms and the purse. The police thought it was unusual that an intruder would not at least steal the guns. The back door of the house was unlocked. There were pry marks on the door frame, which appeared to have been made from both the inside and the outside of the house. The pry marks were not consistent with somebody trying to break into the house. When the back door was closed, the pry marks were not in an area where a tool would have been inserted to break open the door. It looked like the damage occurred when the door was open. There was blood on the front edge of the master bathroom sink, as if somebody had tried to clean up after the murders. There was a latex glove in the center console of Craig's car. It appeared to have blood on the outside. The police sent it to the lab to be tested. The police spoke to Craig. Here is the story that he supplied to them. On Wednesday, December 14, 2016, Craig and his wife went to a Chili's restaurant, arriving sometime around 7 p.m. After eating, they went to a store and purchased beer. They returned home and played video games. The next day, December 15, Craig left for work at about 10:30 a.m. At this time, his wife was in bed and his son was in the bassinet next to the bed. He arrived at work at about 11:45 a.m. His trip to work normally took about a half hour, but on this day, he stopped to pick up coffee for his coworkers. He did not arrive until 11:45 a.m. Craig sent about 3 text messages to his wife between 2 and 3 p.m. She did not respond. He wasn't too worried about his wife. He assumed that she was busy. When Craig returned home, not long before 9:30 p.m., he found that his wife and son had been murdered. He did not physically touch either of them, because it was clear they were dead. The police suspected that there was no intruder and that Craig was the killer. 6 days later, on December 21, 2016, as the police were still investigating the murders, there was a bizarre incident involving Craig. The police in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, received a call about a man who approached someone at a 7-Eleven convenience store. The man was later identified as Craig. Glenwood Springs is about 870 miles from Fort Worth. He was far from home. Craig asked the person who he approached if he could borrow his phone to call some people about a murder. He then talked about how the government was conspiring against him by accusing him of killing his family. He was going to Las Vegas to see Donald Trump and work it out with him. I guess he wanted to commiserate with someone whose sense of grandiosity was equal to his own. Craig mentioned that he was on the run from the police before he drove away in a 2012 Hyundai sedan with no license plates. The police who were responding to the call spotted the Hyundai at about 11.05 p.m. and started following it. Craig pulled into a gas station, exited the vehicle, and attached a license plate to his car. He re-entered the vehicle and accelerated quickly. Craig was pulled over for driving 37 miles per hour in a 25 mile per hour zone. He was arrested for speeding and failing to provide proof of insurance. The police found a pistol in his waistband, another pistol in an ankle holster, and many condoms in his pockets. After searching his vehicle, they found an AR-15 style rifle, a .22 caliber revolver, camouflage clothing, and several bottles of medication. The police in Fort Worth decided to charge Craig with capital murder immediately instead of waiting for the investigation to conclude. They felt that he was a danger to others. Craig was extradited to Texas. He pleaded not guilty. His trial started in October 2021. On November 4, 2021, Craig was found guilty of capital murder. He received the mandatory sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App AOK Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App AOK Navida downloaden und loslegen. AOK Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
Now moving to my analysis. Craig Van Der Weg maintains his innocence, and initially he had some support from various people who knew him. Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that Craig was guilty of murder, starting with the inculpatory factors. Prior to the murders, Craig was communicating with a former girlfriend and was on a few dating apps. This makes it seem as though he wasn't pleased with his marriage and was open to the idea of infidelity. One of Craig's coworkers at Costco described some statements that he made, which didn't look too good for Craig. For example, Craig said that he was unhappy with his wife's physical appearance. Drinking alcohol was the only way he could tolerate her. He wished he could push her down the stairs and cause her death. Craig revealed a dream where he cut off his wife's head like baloney. He claimed that he recently started taking prescription medication and he was hearing voices that told him to kill people. He told his coworker if she ever wanted money, all she needed to do was fake a robbery. Craig was supposed to be at work at 11 a.m. on December 15, but he was 45 minutes late. There was no outgoing activity from Shanna's phone after 10:30 a.m. Shanna may have been dead before Craig left for work. When Craig arrived at work, he parked directly under a surveillance camera, which was unusual for him. It was like he was trying to make sure he could prove he was at work and did not leave at any point during the day. When Craig called 911, he mentioned how he had just arrived home before talking about what was going on inside the house. Communicating the details of his alibi was his priority. For most of the time when he was on the 911 call, Craig was standing inside his house. If he really believed that a homicidal intruder had killed his wife and son, why wasn't he worried about his own safety? Craig was emotionless on the 911 call. At one point, he unconvincingly delivered the line, "My whole world is gone," almost like a robot who was poorly impersonating a human. When the police arrived, Craig continued being emotionless. When he was in the police station, Investigators took a break from interviewing Craig. He used this time to sleep in a chair. He could be heard snoring. Perhaps committing a double murder really cut into his quality sleep time. Craig told the police that his wife was asleep when he left in the morning. Later, he changed his story and said that she was awake and talked to him. Craig told the police that his wife had a $130,000 life insurance policy. In reality, he had just increased the benefit to over $700,000. Investigators found a latex glove in Craig's car. His DNA was on the inside, and his son's DNA was on the outside. The physical evidence at the house did not support the theory about an intruder. Nothing was stolen, and damage to the rear door would not have facilitated a break-in. Craig was arrested for traffic violations in Colorado. It appeared as though he was trying to flee. Moving to the exculpatory factors, there were no witnesses to the murder, no video. It is possible that an intruder was responsible. Shanna's phone did not have outbound communication after 10:30 a.m., but that doesn't necessarily mean that she was killed prior to Craig leaving for work. Craig lived in the same house as his son DJ and interacted with him regularly. The presence of DJ's DNA on a latex glove could have a non-homicidal explanation. Prior to moving to Fort Worth, Craig was described as a kind husband who was the love of Shanna's life. When considering the evidence in this case, do I think that Craig was guilty? Yes, I believe he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Here's what I think happened in this case. This is just a theory, my opinion. Craig was impulsive, irresponsible, callous, self-centered, grandiose, petty, and had a sense of entitlement. Even though he and his wife had just moved into a new house, Craig didn't do anything to help Shanna. He expected her to take care of everything at home so he could spend all his time drinking alcohol and playing video games. Craig was not supportive throughout Shanna's pregnancy. For example, when they drove from Denver to Fort Worth, he was angry because his wife needed to stop so often. After his son was born, Craig was no longer the focus of Shanna's attention. This led to Craig becoming resentful. In addition, he was highly interested in sex with other women and was no longer physically attracted to his wife. Craig decided that he no longer wanted a family. Instead, he was interested in the romantic and financial freedom associated with being single. He came up with a plan to murder his family. To Craig, their lives didn't matter. He was worried about consequences like going to prison, but not worried about the moral implications of murder. Craig was completely focused on his own desires. In his view, his decision to murder his family was fully justified because it helped him to get what he wanted. He may have even convinced himself that his wife and son shared his vision at some mystical level, like they would have been happy to die in order to give him freedom and satisfaction. Craig's greatness demanded this type of sacrifice, and it was their pleasure to assist him. Craig assumed that after he murdered his family, his popularity among women would skyrocket, and he would be in demand romantically. He may have overestimated the number of potential partners interested in dating a man who frequently drinks alcohol and plays video games. Late on December 14, or early on December 15, 2016, Craig murdered his wife and son and cleaned up the crime scene. Craig made several mistakes, like being late to work, leaving a glove in his car, and staging a burglary in an obvious way. In addition, Craig's emotional reaction drew suspicion. He did not understand how others perceived him. The same personality characteristics which facilitated the murders led to him being a suspect. It's not clear what Craig was trying to achieve by fleeing to Colorado. He may have been suffering from mental health symptoms due to the stress of committing the murders, or he may have been trying to convince people that he was mentally ill as part of his defense. Maybe this was his backup plan, like he pretended to have conspiratorial thoughts and to hear voices telling him to kill, hoping that he could avoid being convicted. Whatever his plan was, he was not successful. Now moving to my final thoughts. The theme of this case is how Craig believed he was the center of the universe. In his mind, everything that existed was put in place to affirm and reward his magnificence and superiority. He was above everyone else to such an extent, he felt no connection to human beings. They lived too far below him to matter. The lives of his family members were just as irrelevant as the lives of others. In one way, Craig was superior. Sometimes narcissistic offenders are fairly obvious as far as the danger they present to society. But Craig's disguise was better. He appeared to be a lazy and unhelpful husband, but not a killer. This case demonstrates how narcissism should never be considered harmless, and its potential to cause destruction should never be underestimated.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
Hey, hast du heute Nacht gut geschlafen? Und deine Haut auch? Stell dir vor, du erlebst den Haka-Effekt. Deine Wäsche riecht einfach frisch, ganz ohne chemische Duftwolke. Und deine Haut atmet auf. Beim Putzen musst du nicht husten, sondern kannst einfach durchatmen. Das ist der Moment, in dem du spürst, sauber geht auch anders. Mit Haka. Unbedenklich, hautfreundlich und dennoch wirksam. Probiere den Haka-Effekt für Sauberkeit, die sich gut anfühlt. Jetzt entdecken auf haka.com.